Fantasy freaks and geeks, what's up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. James Coe here, your host. We got the whole crew back again. Adam Rank back in the building. What's going on, pal? A two-week hiatus, but you're back now.
I know, yeah. I guess it was a little mini vacation. Except the only days I was taking off were Wednesdays, as luck would have it.
Uh-huh.
One day,
I see how
we went to the Magic Kingdom. Am I allowed to say Disneyland? I don't want to give them like a full... Can I say Disneyland?
You can say Disneyland.
I don't know. Like, I have to cover it up because I have an Apple computer. I have to cover up because somebody's going to go to James's Facebook Live page.
Yes. By the way, we are on Facebook Live.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it's good.
You have to put it on your page, your journalist page.
Though. I do. I will at some point.
We'll get to the bottom of that.
Yes. We're figuring out those technical difficulties.
I'll be on Friday on my Facebook Live page.
There you go.
Page. Which we've been doing at 1 p.m. Eastern on Fridays for the last couple of weeks. We'll keep that going until the regular season starts. Then we'll
and you basically just answer questions,
rearrange.
Right?
No, I have notes.
You have notes.
I have an agenda.
You do?
I have talking points.
Wow, okay.
I think not to pull back the curtain too much.
Yes.
Or for people who might not be hip to the industry lingo.
Yes.
I think they call it a rundown.
Oh. They do.
It's a thing.
You actually have an actual rundown.
It's a thing that producers hand me, which I ignore.
Okay.
Because I'm like, I'm going to talk about something, whatever comes to mind.
All right. Okay. So you actually have a rundown. So
that's what I miss about doing a live TV show.
We have the Whiz Kid from Wisconsin, Alex Gilhar. What's cracking, man?
We got
you on the right side of the glasses.
It's an interesting change of scenery and air quality and temperature over here, but I like it.
I feel like
I could get used to this.
This is sort of like when you have to sit in the passenger seat of your own car. It just feels weird.
Just
right?
Tilt like you. Everything looks different. You're very worried.
We got MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's up?
Man. Sun's out. Weather's nice.
Yeah. Are the guns out?
California. The sun's always out.
I know, but
why do we always talk about the weather at the start of the show?
Because it's super nice.
Dude, it's never sunny at my house.
It's because you live literally next to the beach.
it's overcast.
Literally next to the beach.
11 months out of the year.
All right, so here we go. We got a big-time show in front of us
Humble
here today.
Humble brag, I guess.
All right, we're going to break down the NFC North. By the way, special thanks to Dylan Milner, who's stepping in and filling in as our producer du jour, and we appreciate that. And it allows Alex Gilhar to be part of the program on Facebook Live.
The whole time.
I have been, right?
For the last several weeks.
Last few weeks, yeah.
Yes, that is true. So we appreciate that. We will get your Facebook Live questions answered. I want you to go to NFL.com/draft.
Where can we see the questions?
I think you go to
you
my
open
page.
Up the Facebook Live stream, bro. You should be a pro at this now.
I am.
Since you spent the first 3 minutes of the podcast pimping your own Facebook
Live.
Well,
no. I'm just letting people know. But it's also because usually it's on my phone.
Right.
So can I hold this up? Or do we have a sponsorship with Samsung?
Wow.
V8?
All right.
I want
to. We're going to break down the NFC North. So I do want people to go to NFL.com/draftkit because there's great information there. I mean, great information. There's profiles that these two fine gentlemen, Alex Gilhar and Marcus Grant, wrote for what, some 300-some-odd players?
Thereabouts,
like yep.
Unbelievable. And we've got your fantasy draft bargains for 2017, potential busts. What else we got on there? Breakout candidates.
Everything. Other content. Top 200 from Fabiano. I think we have your quarterback scoring thing in there. Basically,
Ooh.
It's going to be all the best content we're pumping out to help you with your fantasy draft.
Okay.
Get it at NFL.com/draftkit. You can get a link to our rankings pages. You can also mock draft there, which you should do. Live drafts are now open too, I believe. So if you wanted to be a psychopath and do your actual fantasy draft in June, you could.
I like it.
You like that?
I do like that. I like that a lot. All right. So again, NFL.com/draftkit. We're going to break down the NFC North today. We're going to be talking about the Packers. We're going to be talking about the Bears, the Lions, as well as the Minnesota Vikings. So many storylines in the NFC North. But we start your show, as always, with your top headlines.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
I watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
All right, we talked about it last week, and it finally happened. Eric Decker has now officially signed with the Tennessee Titans. His wife, Jessie James, not to be confused with the road dog, Jesse James, not to be confused with the Pittsburgh Steelers tight end.
Oh, you didn't know?
Country singer, Jesse James. Obviously, they have a home in Nashville because of her work, but they the Deckers now have signed with the Tennessee Titans. It's a one-year deal that pays Eric Decker $3.85 million plus incentives. That, according to NFL Network insider Ian Rappaport, a general stat projection for Eric Decker going into 2017. MG, my guy, Marcus Grant.
I could see Eric Decker with probably about, to give him around 80 catches, maybe, you know, 750 to 800 yards and 6 to 8 touchdowns. That sound legit?
Sounds good. 80 catches might be a little high. Just maybe, all right. They've got a lot of options there in that passing attack. Now, this is kind of bad news for the sleeper trains of Corey Davis and Rishard Matthews. Because 100%. And this is what I said on the podcast weeks ago. The passing attack was pretty concentrated there between those two and Delanie Walker. Now you throw in Eric Decker. It's great news for Marcus Mariota. He's got a wealth of targets, and he's got a great options in the red zone with those guys. He's got deep threats. He's got everything. But figuring out, at least without some game tape and some, you know, numbers to analyze, what the weekly distribution is going to be like, I feel, is going to be a nightmare right now. It's going to be worth throwing a dart at all those guys, but you just don't want to reach too early because it's going to be split up pretty early.
I feel like Corey Davis is now off the table.
Off the table?
I mean, is he going to see enough? I just don't think he's going to see enough targets given Delanie Walker, given Eric Decker, given Rishard Matthews.
It's the fifth overall pick.
But he's a rookie.
Decker has had some injury concerns.
True.
I think Delanie Walker has as well. So I think that it's still.
How old is Delanie now? 31, 32 years old?
Like 32.
Yeah, he's getting up there.
He's been around there for a while. But I think that what this does is really push Marcus Mariota, as Alex alluded to, higher up because everybody.
That's a good point.
All the hype train enthusiasts were pumping this guy pretty hard. I think him and Jameis Winston were the two most talked about guys. I think this moves Mariota ahead now as far as ADP. I think he'll probably go off the board now because he has all these weapons. Which to me,
just his health concern is the only thing. I was actually thinking about that this morning too. Is that because he couldn't run and stuff yet on his leg. But if by training camp he appears back to full go, I'd definitely jump him over those guys, I think.
But if you saw him at the Predators games, he looked good.
He looked good not drinking beer next to his linemen?
That was a little disappointing. Taylor Lewan's out there busting his finger open.
Sure.
Throwing down some tall boys, and he's just.
That shocks no one.
He's just kind of like, eh. He looks like the designated driver, which is great. You need that person. Save that money on Lyft or anything.
For those of
Can
you
I mention Lyft?
Sure. Why not?
Would For those of you such a big deal about
joining
this?
Us on Facebook Live, hello and welcome. Again, Alex Gellhart, James Coe, Adam Wright, and Marcus Grant. For those of you who are first joining in for the very first time, we'll answer your Facebook Live questions as well. We got Pete Simmons.
I'm going to be terrible because I'm going to start getting distracted every time. Oh, man, I retweeted it, so I could probably find it this way.
Okay. Atta, baby. Besides Green Bay wide receivers, who in the North out of the Lions, Bears, and Vikings are at most value? That is a question from Pete Simmons.
Oh, we're doing this part now?
Well, we'll do a little bit throughout the show.
I think you want to do is always acknowledge those young men and women who are coming through.
Absolutely.
To let them know that we see them.
So outside of those Green Bay wideouts, who in that AFC North do you like
NFC North,
in terms of a fantasy value at the wide receiver position?
I think the whole passing game of the Vikings is a little underrated right now, especially in non-sharp drafts with all of us. Stephon Diggs is going to go highly with a good bunch of guys like us. But I think in more casual leagues, he's going to be hanging around a lot later. He's the guy I'd rather have. Adam Thielen's going to be hanging around late.
I like
still
Thielen.
Probably produce, especially because you'll get him at a double-digit round price. And Kyle Rudolph is a great guy to target if you miss out on those top-tier tight ends. You don't want to end up sinking a second or third-round pick in Gronk or Travis Kelce. You can wait for Kyle Rudolph. I think as I was looking at this for that piece, I think he had the highest percentage of air yards from his quarterback among all tight ends in the league. So he's getting targeted downfield. He's a monster in the red zone. He's going to be a great guy to get that. He'll always have that weekly touchdown upside for you with tight end being so volatile. Like, at the worst case, you're hoping he gets in there for a one-yard touchdown. Like, still 6 points, but he's a great guy there. That whole passing attack, I think, is a little undervalued.
Again, we welcome in those folks joining us on Facebook Live. But my buddy Bob DeCastro from Fox 11 LA has joined in. Bob Harris has joined in, and Walker Schenher joining in as well. Well, it's a great segue into, you know, the topic du jour, which is, of course, the NFC North. We'll start with the Packers. They led the division at 10-6. Aaron Rodgers last year, 4,400 yards, 40 touchdowns, 7 interceptions, 369 yards on the ground, 4 additional touchdowns there as well. So 44 total touchdowns for Aaron Rodgers. He was the QB1 again.
Is that good?
That's pretty good. pretty good. Aaron Rodgers, we'll start with you, Alex Gilhart. Projections for him, and what do you see? What's a good round to take Aaron Rodgers?
I mean, he should be the QB1. I mean, like, he has a floor of, like, QB 2 or 3. You know, we talked about this recently, too. There are only 2 years where he's played as a starter. Has he not finished as the QB1 or QB2? One was the sky is falling 2015, and the other was when he broke his collarbone and missed, like, 7 or 8 games. A realistic round in a more casual draft, I think he should go.
Is 2 too early?
If you want to, go for it. I mean, I think you're losing out on the value of a lot of better positions
right there.
So, as we've been doing drafts, we've been talking about it. Lots of times you get into round 3 occasionally in this draft, and there's already a lot of guys you're feeling questionable about. Like,
sure.
Do I trust DeAndre Hopkins coming back? Like, is Carlos Hyde going to lose his job? What the hell is going to happen to Todd Gurley in the Rams this year? So if you'd rather take the sure thing with Aaron Rodgers, I think that's the point. But I certainly would not pass him up even in a much more casual league ahead of the guys that I feel are much more sure things or safe bets.
I'm gonna give you a take that sounds a little hot take-ish.
Okay.
But here's the thing. I really believe Aaron Rodgers has the opportunity to go for 5,000 yards and 50 total touchdowns this year. And I know – on its surface,
that doesn't sound hot-takish to me at all.
And I know because I'm in the right room.
I know I'm in the right room.
But I tell you what, you throw that out online on Twitter or whatever it might be, people, you know, they balk at that a little bit. Aaron Rodgers, 5,000 yards, 50 touchdowns. I think it's in the books, especially since they added a guy in Martellus Bennett. If everybody stays healthy, my God, this offense looks locked and loaded.
I mean, if you go back to his 2011 MVP year, he had 4,600 plus yards and 45 touchdowns, and he didn't play the last game, and that was the game where Matt Flynn torched the Lions for 6 touchdowns and like several hundred yards.
But he's never gotten to 5,000 yards.
He's never
passing.
Gotten to 5,000, no.
And he's never gotten to 50 touchdowns. So
no, 45, 39, 38, 40 have all been in there.
Pretty good. It's pretty good. But the defense
probably isn't going to be as good.
Right, and that will lend itself to more offense as well. So there you go. Jordy Nelson last year, 1,257 through the air, 14 total touchdowns. He led the league in touchdown receptions there. He was your wide receiver, too, despite me throwing dirt on Jordy Nelson after, 3 weeks or whatever it was. He came back with a strong vengeance here. But projections for Jordy Nelson, Adam Rank.
I think with those guys, when you bring in Martellus Bennett and all those people, it actually helps them out. I know a lot of people get scared about it, and they're worried about the target share going around. But Jordy Nelson is so great at stretching the field. They really want to attack people down the field, and we saw that a bunch. I know because I had him on the team the year before he had his catastrophic knee injury. And it seemed like every game they would open with a bomb to him and he would catch it and he'd be like, oh, I'm going to get 27 points from Jordy today. And that would be all you would hear from him ever again. They'd be like,
all right,
you're good.
Yeah.
You can bet. Like, I literally think he just left. Like, I got my touchdown. I'll see you guys later. Like some dude who just goes into the gym and just does 30 minutes of cardio. Like, all right, I'm good. And then he bounces out. So I see that similar, especially with so many good players in the mix now with Bart, with Bennett there. You got to be cognizant of people at the line of scrimmage. Ty Montgomery, whether he's lined up directly behind
or
Aaron Rodgers
in
the slot.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
Going to be commanding a lot of attention. So I think that only helps a guy like that. And I think when you're trying to figure out ways to stop the Packers, it's difficult to pick one guy.
Ty Montgomery last year started just 6 games. Eddie Lacy, remember, was the starter to start the year. And then Ty Montgomery kind of was, you know, in and out of the lineup, not really all that healthy because of that sickle cell trait that they discovered. So hopefully he gets that all sorted out. But 457 rushing yards. I mean, you look at the yards per carry, 5.9 yards per carry, eye-popping certainly. 348 receiving yards, 56 targets, 44 receptions there. 3 touchdowns, all of them on the ground. Ty Montgomery, a giant question mark going into 2017, Marcus Grant. But what do you think will happen with Ty Mont?
I mean, I think he's going to see, obviously, the bulk of the work in the backfield there. And I guess we can tie this into Walker Shaner. Asked if we think Ty Montgomery will be an RB1 this year. I don't think he'll be a fantasy RB1 this year. I do have questions about whether or not over the course of 16 games, he can stand up to the workload that will be asked of him, especially when they've got a guy like Jamal Williams there who, you know, may not be the RB1 right away, but certainly can be that more of the between the tackles kind of power runner. I think in a world where we are inundated with running back platoons and committees and that sort of thing. You can look at Ty Montgomery as maybe being an RB2, a guy who will get a lot of the work there, but I don't know that he's a guy you're going to see get 200 carries or 250 touches over the course of the season.
I love this question from Bob Harris, who asks, are we getting too far in front of the whole Jamal Williams thing? Thoughts on Aaron Jones? Alex Gellhart, you know, obviously you're very tapped in to, you know, all the beat writers and stuff that that write about the Packers. What are they saying about that backfield?
I mean, everything right now is about Ty Montgomery is the leader in the clubhouse, and the team is doing everything they can to set him up to be that leader. He's been working with former Packer Brandon Jackson on his pass blocking, which was a weakness of his game last year, and if he irons that out, it's going to be hard for him to come off the field on those third downs. He's a converted wide receiver. He's a great pass catcher. The guy is built. Like, we've seen him. He's muscular. He's built more like a running back than a wide receiver, honestly. And he was good between the tackles last year. I really honestly think he can handle the full-time workload. I think they'd rather have him. I think Aaron Jones is going to be a great compliment. It reminds me of what they did years ago, and I know other people have made this comparison when they got Eddie Lacy and Jonathan Franklin, and were mixing them both in. That's kind of what they got with Jamal Williams and Aaron Jones. I would love to see them use Aaron Jones in more pass catching options and different packages, because they've honestly never had a back like that has sustained on the team, a good scat, you know, crazy good back in the open space. But that's going to be hard. It's going to be hard to rely on him in a fantasy sense. I think Ty Montgomery is the back to own unless something happens here, and I think he's got a really high ceiling.
Does the specter of Jamal Williams scare you off at all?
I'm not super concerned. I think, you know, even in Eddie Lacy's heyday, when he was still crushing it for them, they were giving James Starks the ball plenty of times in those years. And so even if, you know, Jamal Williams approaches 100 carries and the lion's share go to Ty Montgomery, this is a high-scoring offense. They ran the ball 38 times last year to backs in the red zone alone, and Ty Montgomery only had 12 of those. So if you say, you know, if suddenly he's getting 24 of those instead of Lacy getting 10 before he got injured and stuff, all of a sudden we're looking at a back with a high-scoring potential that's going to catch a lot of passes in a high-powered offense. It's a great situation.
The Lions at 9-7 last year. Marvin Jones came out the gates on fire. Finished the year with 930 yards on 103 targets, just 55 receptions, so not a great catch rate. But how about this? 482 yards in his first four games, okay? 482 in his first four. He had 448 the remaining 12 games. That's tough.
Not great, Bob.
Well, that's what happened. Everybody identified him as their number one receiver, and that's where the coverage rolled, and he was taken out of the game, which is why Golden Tate was able to establish himself as a somewhat fantasy option down the stretch there. But that's the one thing about Marvin Jones, is he's a good receiver, but when you try to make him a number one, he just doesn't. He's just not that guy. He's not Antonio Brown or Mike Evans or somebody like that. So when you are now drawing the coverage that was usually pulled away when you were playing opposite
AJ Green. Right.
Like, it's not going to work out for you. So that was too bad, and I would expect more of the same, unless they find somebody else who's going to be their wide receiver. I think teams will attack him the same way and be like, let's take out Marvin Jones because he'll kill us if we don't. And then
he seemed like kind of a monotone weapon as well, right? Like, he was constantly going deep downfield. And again, you look at that catch rate, 55 receptions on 103 targets. I think that would lend itself to that.
Yeah, they were trying to stretch the ball to him a lot. They were at least going after him, but he was covered a lot, especially at the end of the year. He was covered a lot, and it was just Stafford trying to get him involved, which was admirable because I still had him on a couple of teams. So I really do appreciate
it. I appreciate that.
Bro, don't do it on my account.
I could be mistaken here, but if I remember right, I don't have my computer, so I can't look up the NGS stuff. But I'm pretty sure his downturn also coincided with a little bit of an offensive shift because he was so great in those first couple weeks because they were chucking the ball deep to him more regularly. Yeah. And those targets dried up as they shifted more towards that quick passing, shorter game. And that's where so much he wasn't able to be quite as useful or as dynamic. He was greater. You know, you think about that game against the Packers where he had 200 yards. He was getting targeted downfield left and right.
Right.
But instead, if you're trading those in for five-yard passes instead, that's not Marvin Jones' game as much. So
and that's my big concern with any of the Lions receivers is that they are relying very heavily on yards after the catch. It's something that Golden Tate does pretty well.
True.
Marvin Jones maybe not so great at that, but it's a situation where, you know, you have guys who are going to catch the ball 3 to 5 yards away from the line of scrimmage, and then in order for you to get big yardage totals, you need them to break a couple of tackles or just have missed tackles or what have you, and that's a tough way to live.
I feel like the Lions' offensive approach anyways was similar to what the Dallas Cowboys were trying to do. They were using that short passing game and being very, you know, dink and dunk to kind of try to protect their defense too, because their defense wasn't all that great. So to kind of keep them off the field, the offense was just grinding yards and grinding clock. And
they
being
also
able
had
to,
no running game with Amir Abdullah injured, Dwayne
zero.
Washington injured, Theo Riddick not great going between the tackles, and them not giving the ball to Zach Zenner enough.
Not giving it to him enough. Oh, okay.
Hey, when they fed him the ball down the stretch, he performed well.
That's all right. All right.
Stop trying to make Zenner happy.
I'm not saying he's an elite back. I'm just saying, like, they had an option there and they weren't using it as much as they could have.
All right, let's stay with you, Wiz, and let's stay in that backfield. Amir Abdullah played just 2 games last year. Theo Riddick played in just 10 games, 357 rush yards, 371 through the air. So obviously a great dual threat in Theo Riddick, as we know. Break down the backfield for me in Detroit.
This is a tough one to peg because obviously a big fan of Abdullah and would love to see him. He's not going to get the like a featured back workload because Theo Riddick is there and is going to steal some of the passing game work. So you kind of fall into this area where I was actually talking about this with the great Rich Rebar on Twitter yesterday about how he was saying how it's kind of baffling right now that Amir Abdullah's ADP is around RB20, Tevin Coleman's is there, and I forget who the other one was, Bilal Powell maybe, because you can get backs that could have a similar slice of their offensive pie like Bilal Powell or like Kenneth Dixon or Paul Perkins rounds later. And I can see that. I think the reason people might be comfortable chasing Abdullah a little higher is because his talent is so tantalizing. But sometimes we have to distance ourselves from just pure talent evaluation in fantasy. It's right. Certainly a factor, but so is opportunity. And I think he'll be a good value if you can get him in the right round. But I worry,
what is the right round?
I don't know, 5, 6, maybe, you know, 7, even if you can slide him back that far.
Yeah. I'd feel comfortable with him at 7.
Yeah.
5.
This is it's a good offense.
Good,
it's a good offense. There's going to be scoring opportunities, yeah. You know. He should be fully healthy. They wanted to treat him like give him a prominent role in the offense last year. Didn't come to fruition when he got injured. So the potential is certainly there, but it could also be a frustrating split backfield with Theo Riddick getting so many catches, although rumor is he could move more into just almost like a slot receiver this year. So with Anquan Boldin gone especially.
Matt Stafford was a top 10 quarterback last year, 4,300 yards approximately, 24 touchdowns, 10 interceptions. Marcus, your thoughts on Matty Stafford going into 2017?
I think he remains to be kind of a lower tier QB1 this year. I
mean, matchup-based guy?
Yeah, kind of a matchup-based guy, but I mean, I think the way the offense shakes out, and you know, Alex alluded to it, the way they went to kind of a shorter passing game, more accurate, high-percentage throws, that benefited Stafford. I mean, he looked good doing that, and you know, it's not the same offense we saw a couple years ago where you know Stafford's going to throw the ball, you know, 600, 700 times a year and, you know, get around 5,000 yards, but because he's going to be more efficient, the interceptions, I think, will come down. The touchdowns will still be, you know, they may not be spectacular, but it'll be nice. And like I said, he's going to be that guy. He is that guy that Tony Romo was for so many years in the sense that you can wait until, you know, round 9, 10, 11. He's going to be there. He's going to give you solid, maybe not great, but solid week-to-week production.
Okay.
And at the end of the year, like I said, he'll end up as somewhere around the QB 8, 9, or 10.
The Vikings.
May I say something?
Please.
About Stafford. He's one of my favorite quarterbacks.
Why is
really
that?
I love him. I thought during his rookie season.
Is it because he goes up, with the backward flat brim? Is that why?
That's I don't wear mine backward. He's the best. He's one of the best mic'd up quarterbacks. He's always good. But he had that mic'd up situation against the Browns where his shoulder was falling off and he's like, no, I can throw it. And he went in and almost died and whatever.
Yeah.
So I'm a huge fan football wise of Matt Stafford, but he sucks as a fantasy player. Absolutely sucks. He had 5 touchdowns. He had 5 touchdown passes the last 5 weeks of the season.
Ooh.
And that came in 3 games.
Oh.
You know who's...
He had one big game against the Rams. Yeah. He had 4 touchdowns against the Rams. The week before he had 3 against the Eagles. He had another 3 touchdown game against the Packers. He had a 3 touchdown game against the Colts, which means there's too much variance. It's way up and
right.
down with that guy. He will murder your fantasy team because of that. And it's like, it's not because he's a bad quarterback. And I know at the end of the season, when you look at it, you're like, hey, he was the number 10.
Season long, yeah.
Season long, he was number 10. And I enjoy him. I'm not knocking him as a quarterback. But as a fantasy option, I can never draft him.
He reminds me, and I was going to say this too, when Marcus said you could get him there, I was like, I don't feel good about having him. There's a lot of guys in that area that I'd rather take if I waited on a quarterback. Because like you said, he's a good quarterback. He reminds me of Mark Brunell, like back in the day with the Jaguars. Like, great quarterback, but at the end of the year, he'd be around like QB 12 or 14 in
QB
fantasy.
10, it seems
then
great.
You'd look and you'd be like, you had 3,400 yards and like 24 touchdowns and like two games with 20-plus points. Like, I'd honestly probably rather stream the position and play the matchups than try and ride Matt Stafford every single week.
I see.
Yeah, I'd take him for high scoring games and then stream other weeks.
Well, I didn't get to week 15 because of him. But
bitter party
14,
of one over here.
Week 14 against the Giants.
Yeah.
273 yards, no touchdowns, an interception.
All right, so there you go.
That's amazing. So much fun. So happy for that.
The Vikings, and even 8-8. Last year, Dalvin Cook was drafted by the Vikings. It was an end of an era, really. Adrian Peterson now off that team. And it's Latavius Murray who they signed in the offseason, then drafted Dalvin Cook.
Sorry about your luck, Latavius.
Latavius ran for 788 rushing yards, had 264 through the air, 12 touchdowns. 12 touchdowns for Latavius Murray behind that massive offensive line in Oakland, 4.0 yards per carry. The offensive line in Minnesota, I don't know. I mean, their grade last year was obviously not great, but a lot of injuries befell that offensive line. What do we make of the backfield there, Adam Rank, Dalvin Cook, Latavius Murray?
Dalvin Cook's going to be your number one guy.
Okay.
And he's going to be a stud. I'm amazed that so many people are not regarding him more highly. I think that because the offensive line will be a little bit better. And I know he had some off-the-field issues.
And he got beat up during the combine, too, in terms of his metrics and all those things.
I don't care about any of that.
Okay.
Because when you look at his metrics in pads, and it's not sports science, but it's one of those – not Spark, but one of those other ones where, like, when you measure him doing football moves in pads, he's off the charts.
Right.
He's as fast as John Ross in pads as he is.
I get you.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. So if I was drafting a team based on how well you'll do – in a superstars competition where you're running around in Under Armour, and that, like,
okay.
You know what? I might not want him.
Yeah, not drafting that dude there. Right.
It's a straight up football player. It reminds me so much of Randy Moss. Like, nobody wanted Randy Moss. Like, oh, he's got off field concerns, whatever. And then he came out and he destroyed everybody, including the Cowboys, in that first season. So I think that I think Dalvin Cook, man, he should be. Outside of Christian McCaffrey, he might be the number one rookie running back that I'm going at.
Interesting. Okay, there you go. Ahead of Leonard Fournette from Adam Rank there. All right, we welcome in Daniel Stevenson and our very own Catherine Chan Smith joining in on Facebook Live.
She's like a czar of social media. You better watch out, James.
I do. I want to be a czar of something. That's such a cool title.
You're the czar of Mark Ingram haterade.
I hate the NFC South, yes.
I'm sorry, do you mean on pace?
On pace? What a jerk to ruin that joke, to actually get to 1,000 yards.
He did. He broke the curse. He's no longer on pace.
What a jerk.
He passed down the on pace moniker to Carlos Hyde.
Okay.
Hyde is the new on pace.
He's the new on pace? All right. We'll go there. Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, the wide receivers there from Minnesota.
Kind of touched on them already.
Yeah, a little bit. So I'll just give you the stats and we'll move on. But Stephon Diggs, 903 yards, 3 touchdowns. He was your wide receiver 43. So overall, a pretty disappointing season for Stephon Diggs. Also considering the brilliance that he flashed against Green Bay.
Well, he suffered a groin injury in week 4, which is the thing to remember. And he said this offseason he was never the same after that. And I think you can kind of tell. And even perhaps, like, they switched coordinators when Norv Turner resigned, I think, after week 8.
That's right.
And Diggs went from doing a lot more downfield to having a lot more shorter routes. But that also could have been because of his injury and, like, not being able to get up to full speed as much down there to win those routes deep. Something to think about. But fully healthy, I mean, 13 games last year, he was just shy of 1,000 yards and just had kind of bad touchdown luck.
Yeah. He was on.
You know, he's a positive regression chance. So if he, you know, if he crosses the century mark and hits 6 or 7 touchdowns instead, he's going to be a tremendous value in there. And I just want to throw out this kind of hot take. I could have saved it to the end for storylines for forgetting.
Ooh.
Sam Bradford, streaming quarterback week 1.
That was my storyline to
Plays the Saints. There's some tough matchups with other quarterbacks.
Okay.
Playing the Saints. They're in Minnesota, so he's at home. should be a positive game script, score a bunch of touchdowns. Sam Bradford could push for top 12 quarterbacks scoring in week one.
Wow. Go get it.
And he always has that reputation for being a quarterback who's hurt all the time.
Yeah.
He started 29 games over the last 2 years.
Okay.
And last year he got murdered behind that line of
scrimmage. He's failed to make double-digit starts in a season once in his career.
Like, the Red Witch from Game of Thrones went over there and resurrected Sam Bradford, I think, 3 times during the 2016 season.
Yeah, I love Sam Bradford as a streamable quarterback.
Week one, though, plays the Saints. He's at home.
Words I was not expecting to hear today. I love
Sam Bradford.
So if you're in a deeper league, 12, 14 teams, your quarterback's got a crap matchup in week one.
Okay.
Consider Sam Bradford.
Adam Thielen was one of the favorite targets of Sam Bradford. 967 receiving yards, 5 touchdowns. He was your wide receiver 29. But we warn you always to not look at the season-long totals, you know, generally speaking. Because why? Adam Thielen had 202 yards and 2 touchdowns in Green Bay in week 16. That's a huge chunk of his production coming in 1 week when generally most folks weren't playing against a Green Bay defense that had just been absolutely destroyed by injuries and lackluster play. So,
yeah, but he started just 10 of those games. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't like he was a full-time starter. And maybe it was because Diggs was hurt. But, like, watching the Vikings, you're like, yeah, Thielen's better. Just by watching them.
The chemistry between him and Sam Bradford.
That's what I said. It could be with Diggs was hurt. It could be that he was hurt or whatever, but
they're both good, though.
I mean, the bottom line is you're getting Adam Thielen late in your draft. So, you know, the risk is minimal, to say the least, regarding Adam Thielen. And again, if Sam Bradford's your guy going throughout the season, they have a chemistry going. So why not? I like it. The Chicago Bears, 3-13. It's the hometown team of our very own Adam Rank. Jordan Howard was a rookie last year, and despite that rookie status, 13-13 on the ground. So, again, 1,300 yards rushing, nearly 300 yards receiving, 5.1 yards per carry, 7 total touchdowns. He is universally regarded as a top 12 pick in this upcoming fantasy draft in 2017. But I will throw the question out to you, Adam Rank. Because you like Jordan Howard.
Why are you trying to trigger me? Just come out with your hot takes. Just do your Todd Gurley.
No, I'm not going to.
Regression.
Oh, come on. Jordan Howard.
Webster's Dictionary defines regression as Jordan Howard. Just say it.
Oh, my
God. Todd Gurley.
I'm just saying.
Because there was one other rookie who failed to live up to expectations.
Is he worth a top 10 pick?
Yeah.
Yes?
Of course he is.
Okay, tell me why.
Because when you look at the numbers. There's not a lot of number one running backs out there.
Okay.
Somebody who's going to get 300 touches in an offense with a head coach who loves to run the football, who wants to keep games close, who's on a team with its strength is in its front seven, which means you don't want Mike Glennon going out there and throwing it 3 times.
You don't?
Throwing it away. You don't. I mean, I don't think that he will all the time, but I still think that you're going to try to establish the run. And one of the big differences between him and Todd Gurley is that his offense functions in 2017. And you look at some of the.
Are we certain that it's going to function?
Yeah, why?
Mike Glennon's the starting quarterback.
Okay.
Cameron Meredith, we lost the wide receiver.
Is that really any worse than Matt Barkley?
We lost the Hall of Famer Matt Barkley.
You had Brian Hoyer for several games last year, too.
Brian Hoyer and Cuddy. Like 2 games. Like he's Ken Cutler. Yeah, so exactly. It's the same. But you look at it, the offensive line.
Yeah.
Though even with injuries to
it's their strength.
To Long
yeah.
and to Josh Sitton, they yeah. were still the 8th ranked rushing offensive line according to Football Outsiders. Our friend Brad Evans was able to dig up some of these metrics. He was 3rd in breakaway runs, 10th in yards after contact, 7th in yards after contact per game, 13th in yards per touch. And tackles evaded, he was 6th overall. He's an actual running back.
Yep,
he's not a converted wide receiver or anything like that. So I feel very
taking
comfortable.
Taking shots at Ty Montgomery.
There wasn't a shot at anybody. I'm just saying that he's a running back, and that's his position, and it's been his position for a long-ass time. And so I know it's
– Wow, you're heated.
It's No, again, I asked you.
I'm with Adam Rank, though. I'm 100% with Adam Rank on this one. Okay. I know, James, you had Jordan Howard as top of your players to avoid this year.
100%.
Which I am. I actually was considering writing a counterpoint
to your
article, which may happen. So keep
an
eye
out
for that.
You guys
should just do a point counterpoint article together because you said you wanted to do a Jordan Howard one.
I have a much longer piece ready to rock and roll.
You guys should just back and forth.
I agree.
Chop
it up and go at each other. But I think this is the anti-Jordan Howard side of the table then.
Apparently.
I think he's being overvalued right now.
Yeah.
I think we need to learn from the lessons of the Todd Gurley thing. Our friend Matt Harmon wrote a great article focusing on the three things for at least top five backs were quarterback performance, scoring offense, and targets.
Yeah.
Howard really only checks one of those boxes coming into this next year, and that's targets. He's a great he's a good pass catcher. I think he got attributed with 7 drops last year.
Oh, brother.
I went back and watched all of his targets. They were not all on him.
Brother, he's not a good receiver.
He's a good receiver. He caught with his hands. He's pretty fluid. I went back and literally watched every pass target of his.
He had a brutal drop against the Vikings.
He had a couple tough
but
ones.
He's a rookie.
But here's something to note. To be concerned about that I dug up on Next Gen Stats for an article that we'll publish on NFL.com later about running backs and bad offenses, but first it's going to appear in a magazine to hit shelves later.
Ooh.
But per Next Gen Stats, Jordan Howard had one of the best yards per carry when facing 7 or fewer men in the box.
Yeah.
It's 6.1 yards per carry. Drops to 3 yards per carry when there's 8-plus men in the box.
Interesting.
So if teams start not respecting that passing game led by Mike Glennon and Cameron Meredith and Kevin White.
But he's still averaging over 3 yards per carry, which means
on a stack.
You run that 4 times, that's a first down.
That's how it works. Obviously.
Right, that's exactly how it works. So my point is
that was the argument for Melvin Gordon,
that was my argument. Like I'm not arguing here with Jordan Howard.
Let me just finish this statement here. We look at things so. Howard was great last year, largely because he was so efficient with his touches. And he did create a lot of yards for himself. He had his 5.3 yard per carry average. I was actually looking at some other stuff in Next Gen Stats. Haven't digested it at all. But he had one of the biggest differences between yardage he ran before a defender was within 1 yard of him and then yardage ran after a defender was within. So he was creating for himself.
Yeah.
But the trouble is, if boxes are getting stacked against him, he only scored 6 touchdowns last year, 3 of which came in 1 game. And it was that snowpocalypse against the 49ers where nobody wanted to throw the damn ball. Mm-hmm. So if the scoring opportunities stay the same or slide back a little bit, he's less efficient simply because the offense isn't as great and they're not scoring. Like, all you're going to have to bank on are his passing targets. And it's just – that's a dicey proposition for me to sink a top 10 pick in. I think he's still around a top 10 to top 20 back for sure, but I don't want to take him in the first or second round.
This is all well and good, and this is all analysis that resides in a world where running backs are actually a living thing. We don't live in that world anymore.
Running backs are dead.
They're dead now. They're dead now. And I just think that regardless of how good or bad the offense is – and, Alex, you wrote about not being scared of guys in a bad offense – this is a guy who's going to get 300 touches or close to this year. And that's something you just can't find anywhere anymore. I mean, literally 3/4 of the league is running a committee system. And so now Jordan Howard is a guy with an opportunity with nobody really behind him because, we all know that Jeremy Langford was laid to fantasy rest last year.
Oh, poor Mike Clay.
Mike Clay, man. Mike Clay,
blow torches to
Mike Clay wrote the eulogy on him last year. And so, it's a situation where, we sat here the last couple of weeks and talked about how much Bilal Powell and or Matt Forte can be valuable on a Jets team that's going to be abysmal this year. So the Bears, who should be, in theory, a little bit better, why wouldn't you feel better about their one and only running back, their one and only offensive option, really?
For me, it's about relative value.
Yeah, it's cost. This one and only option is going in the top 14 picks.
That's right.
Bilal Powell and Matt Forte aren't going to double-digit rounds.
Right.
Even Bilal Powell, if he gets crazy, drafted in the 6th round. I would jump out of my seat, draft Jordan Howard, and slap everyone in the face if he was available in the 6th round.
Of course.
His ADP is about 16, and he's the RB8.
Yeah, that's.
I think I have him ranked as my RB7, but okay, sure.
I like Jordan Howard. I think he's a great player. I just don't want him at that cost.
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, just to button up the Jordan Howard conversation, we talk about him being. I appreciate and I love the fact that you saw every single one of his targets, but the numbers, man, 50 targets last year, 29 receptions. That's a 58% catch rate. It's literally
there were
hold on.
18 or 19 of those he couldn't even catch if he was 8 feet tall.
I understand what you're saying, but it's literally the worst catch rate of any qualified running back in 2016.
So it's only bound
his seven.
He was so effective. He was so effective, and now it's going to go up because it's going to progress.
Seven, and his seven drops too. I mean, by far, you realize the most drops.
But he was a rookie.
Okay.
He will be working on that part of
plus,
the game.
The only way you get seven drops is if they trust you enough to throw you the ball that many times.
Oh God.
Here's the and if you look into his past too, it's like look. It's crazy when you look at the scouting report on Jordan Howard. One of the major concerns was, well, this guy doesn't really know how to catch the ball. He didn't get a lot of targets out of the backfield at Indiana and also the school he transferred from, which is eluding me
Alabama,
right now.
Alabama, Birmingham.
UAB.
Yep, there you go. And I think that was one of his major concerns coming into the league, and we saw it play out in the numbers in 2016 as well. I have serious reservations as to whether or not this guy's actually can actually catch the ball out of the backfield. I just don't buy it.
That's a skill you can learn, though. I mean, it's a learnable, teachable skill. Catching the football is a sure. teachable skill.
Get on the jugs machine, kids.
All right, so there you go. So the Bears at 3-13. Alshon Jeffrey gone now. Cameron Meredith steps in to be their, I guess, their top target. 888 receptions, 4 touchdowns in 14 games for Cameron Meredith 2016. Big boomer bust guy, though. Double digits in terms of fantasy scoring, 7 of his 14 games, but less than 3 fantasy points in 5 games. So big time boomer bust guy. Adam Rank, where do you take a guy like Cameron Meredith in 2017?
See, I had prepared for Jordan Howard. You know what? I know that we took him in our I'm trying to remember where I add him in our draft.
Okay.
Because I'm just basing it on where guys are going. I mean, he falls to the double-digit rounds because for the same reasons that everybody looks at that Bears offense and
right.
just thinks that they're straight dukes and nobody wants a part of it, and everybody would rather make aerial poof jokes about Mike Glennon. And so, although there's a better comparison in our world. I'm not going to get into it.
Okay. thank you. We appreciate it.
No, I don't want to do it. Wait, okay. No, I'm debating?
No, don't do it.
No, don't want to do it. But, no, he's falling into the double-digit rounds, and that's the thing that's always incredible to me is, like, even though you might believe that that offense is dog feces, he is still a wide receiver one of an NFL team.
You took him in round 7 of our 12-team most recent mock.
I was a 12-teamer.
Yeah. That's
12-teamer,
cool.
And he was your 4th wide receiver.
I feel that's about
right. It's a great spot.
Wide receiver 4, 7th right. round. Yeah, I dig that.
The opportunities will present themselves.
But I thought I saw his ADP go somewhere else. But I also will start reaching on dudes that I like.
Sure.
Because I'll see
Do you like Cameron Meredith?
I do. Yeah. Again, he's a wide receiver 1, and if he's going to be my wide receiver 4, and the number one option for the Bears, who I think that, and unfortunately, Glennon does not get a good rap for whatever reason. He got beat out by Jameis Winston, who's a good quarterback. The only person who really didn't like Mike Glennon was Lovie Smith. The same guy who thought it was a good idea to start Rex Grossman in the Super Bowl against the Colts. So, actually, if Lovie Smith doesn't like him, I love him.
That's a check mark in his favor.
Oh, that's good. Like, Lovie Smith looked at you and didn't think you were a good quarterback. Sold.
I'm old enough to remember when Mike Glennon pushed Russell Wilson out of a college job.
Boom.
Oh, that's right.
Chased him to Wisconsin.
That's right. I forgot about that.
Cameron Meredith going in the 10th round of fantasy football calculator drafts, 12 teams as well.
That seems about right. Yeah. I reached for him. All right. Because we're also doing that too. We're not using our own ratings. We're using the ratings of one other person.
Yeah.
And his are just so
chalky. There is a printer in the office. You could print out your own rankings, and you could cross guys off as they go. You know, old school, like we used to do with magazines when you gather for the draft.
I would do that.
Before the internet and these millennials
so
and their apps and MFL 10s.
You're a millennial. What are you talking about?
No.
What?
Jeez. I'm immersed in letting people or helping people decide which NFL team they want to want to be a fan of.
Storyline I am missing in the NFC North. Quickly around the horn, Alex Gellhar.
You didn't talk about your boy that you just wrote a love
letter
to.
That's where I was going.
Martellus Bennett. James, tell us. Why should we be excited about Martellus Bennett?
The bottom line is Martellus Bennett is a top 10 fantasy quarterback. That's his
quarterback? Wow.
Oh, sorry. Tight end.
Wow, he's that good?
He's that good. That's his floor. That is his floor. Right now, we're seeing this guy go in the 9th or 10th round of a lot of drafts, right? Maybe later. I think Michael Fabiano had him listed at like 124 or like 114 or something, outside of his top 100, which is – that's just crazy talk. Martellus Bennett, to me, is a top 10, locked and loaded – fantasy tight end that you're getting a little bit later in your draft. I actually have him ranked as my tight end four, which I get is incredibly aggressive. I have him ranked ahead of Greg Olsen, who I'm a little bit worried about his usage in 2017, and I have him rated ahead of Tyler Eifert in 2017 as well, mostly because of injury concerns. But look, Marty B in that offense, man, oh my goodness. I really honestly feel like 800 yards and 8 touchdowns is a fair conservative estimate for him. But if there's injuries to Jordy, if Devontae Adams falls off, if Randall Cobb gets injured, if Ty Montgomery gets injured, all of those targets, to me at least, I think Marty B would be the beneficiary there. I really feel like he could get to 100 targets in 2017. I think he can. I honestly think he can get to 70 receptions and 1,000 yards if things break right for him. And he's got double-digit upside in terms of touchdowns as well. So, man, I tell you what, man, I am just through the moon. I'm so excited to see what Marty B does in Green Bay.
I love him there. I'm not quite as hyper on him as you, just because Jordy is the dominant red zone target there. I mean, he led the league in targets inside the 20 and inside the 10 last year, as well as touchdowns in both spaces.
Yep.
Granted, that's not to say that some of those can't slide to the 6'6" Martellus Bennett, but when it's crunch time, Rodgers goes to who he trusts the most and has the brain meld with. But still, I think your yardage, you know, marker's right, and we've seen in the past tight ends, when they get utilized as Mike McCarthy and Aaron Rodgers want them to,
right,
can put up great numbers. Like you alluded back to the JerMichael Finley years. You know, I don't think he ever, like, even really played a full 16 games there, but he had, like, his best year was, like, what, 700-800 yards and 8 touchdowns? But, I mean, even if Marty B doesn't get that 8 touchdowns, even if he gets 5, like, last year, 800 yards and 5 touchdowns was, like, the tight end 6.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. And I think that's – you can – I mean, you could put that in pen, permanent marker. That dude is going to be a top 7 or 8 tight end. And I think, just in my opinion, I just, you know, breaking down those numbers, and again, you could find that on NFL.com/co, my Marty B love letter. But I just think the upside is there for him to be a top 3, a top 2 tight end. I mean, obviously, if Gronk stays healthy, forget about it. But if he doesn't stay healthy, I don't know.
I mean, no, I feel like top 2 or top 3 is then you're really saying something, because Martellus Bennett was the tight end 7 last year. You know, he had a decent year, 700 yards. The 7 touchdowns certainly helped a lot, but being the, you know, a top 7, top 8 fantasy tight end isn't necessarily saying a lot.
Yeah, I just – but I look
but
at
still,
where he's getting drafted. He's getting drafted as, you know, a tight end 10,
tight end 12. I think I have him as my tight end 7.
Yeah, that's silly. No, not the tight end 7 part.
No, but tight end 10. Going,
yeah, that's silly.
Don't make sense.
No, like, I'd take him over Hunter Henry in a heartbeat. I'd take him over
in a heartbeat.
Only because Antonio Gates is still hanging around.
He is.
He's got some punches left to throw. He's got a record left to break.
Once he break, they'll break that in the first week.
What does he need? 3?
Who do the Chargers play in week 1?
I don't know. He needs 3. MJ, my guy, Marcus Grant, give me a storyline in the NFC North I'm missing.
I mean, I guess I'd stay with Green Bay, and, you know, will the real Devontae Adams stand up?
Right.
You know, is it going to be the guy from last year who balled out? Is the guy from a couple years ago where, you know, he had drop issues and they, you know, weren't sure if they had faith in the guy? You know, I know that we had our mock draft about a week or so ago. Jake Seeley took him really early.
Oh my God.
Wide receiver 12.
Took him crazy
third
early.
Third round.
Can't do it.
So yeah, I'm really curious to see which Devontae Adams shows up. I'm going to split the difference and feel like he's going to be somewhere in between what we've seen.
Adam Rank, NFC storyline I'm missing.
Now, we talked about it earlier. Sam Bradford, much maligned quarterback. Really doing the series of why you should root for is what really drew me. Sam Bradford. Because remember last year, people were, he was being touted as an MVP candidate for some time. Because as well as he played, and really now that the Vikings look at him as their long term answer at the quarterback, like he is now their franchise.
Their franchise. I mean,
I don't know that that's accurate.
I feel like he's a 2017 rental until Teddy Bridgewater comes back. No.
He could go beyond because the way Teddy's contract works out, but I don't think they're so assured in it.
I think that they have their quarterback now. I think that they're sold on him. I think he's going to be their number one guy going forward. Again, still much maligned. Poor Sam Bradford. What can he do? What can he do to help erase one season where he was injured? I mean, even though he gets beaten up a lot, but he makes his starts. He's out there. He's very efficient. He does throw a nice ball. Like, there's a lot of
– this was a guy that went number one overall for a reason.
That's right.
Overall quarterback. And, oh, my gosh, St. Louis couldn't figure out a way to work with him.
People won't take Sam Bradford seriously until he shortens up those sleeves. All right, like, I'm not trusting a quarterback
not trusting a quarterback with like mid-range sleeves that go down to like his
elbow.
That's
what makes
you know?
Him a boss.
That's so cool.
That's hipster.
No, it is. It's totally hipster.
They wouldn't think he's Fran Tarkenton now.
They went from Teddy Two Gloves to Sammy Sleeves. I mean, like, literally.
So great.
I want to throw in one more storyline.
Yeah, man.
Eric Ebron.
Okay.
Is a great underrated tight end. If you want to find a guy to draft as the 12th, 13th, 14th tight end off the board.
All right.
Ebron's a guy. He's improved pretty much all of his statistics year over year except for touchdowns. Now Anquan Boldin is out of the picture. I think he had close to 20 red zone targets last year.
Whew.
A lot of those could slide towards Ebron, who is a physical specimen, is a great presence in the red zone. He's like 6'5", 260.
Specimen.
So look to Ebron. I mean, he's been slowly evolving. They picked up his fifth-year option. They think he's finally might be turning into the player they took instead of Odell Beckham, but that's besides the point. Ebron is a good tight end value.
All right, so there you go. NFL.com/draftkit to find all of your fantasy drafting needs. NFL.com/draftkit. All right, let's close out the show with a round of Daily Daps.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the Daily
Daps and Hugs. Give me daps because I be scribbling raps.
Give me dapping up daps about daps.
All right, Daily Dap time. We shall start with the WizKid from Wisconsin, Alex Gelhar. What you got?
Going to dap, first and foremost, Better Call Saul, wrapped up its season on Monday. It's a phenomenal show. Hasn't been picked up yet. I really hope it is. I encourage everybody to go watch it, go catch up, tweet about it.
Are they really thinking about not picking it?
Well, they haven't renewed it yet. They probably will, but
it seems.
It's one of their highest – the ratings aren't amazing. It's one of their highest-rated non-zombie shows. But
non-zombie show.
But the thing is, it's just phenomenal storytelling, and I'd love to see it continue. So Daily Daps to them. Also, Daily Daps to the band Polyphia. Polyphia. I found them via Spotify Discover Weekly and on the mobile app. I'm trying to find their information, but they are a guitar-bending instrumental group from Texas. Really great stuff to listen to if you're grinding or working and need kind of upbeat, motivational music. Like, I love to listen to that kind of stuff when I'm writing that doesn't have lyrics, because otherwise I'll get distracted
in
the lyrics, humming along or thinking about whatever. So look them up on Spotify. They're great. They had a lot of good songs, really talented musicians. And I think that's all I've got to dap. So we'll – and last real quick. Got a new game over the weekend to play with some buddies called the Player Unknown's Battlegrounds. It's a first-person shooter – third-person shooter. But how it does is it takes 100 people, and it drops you onto an island. Like, you jump out of a plane over this island. You parachute down. You don't start with any weapons, any armor, any anything. So you run, and the map, the weapon spawns change every time. But so you're running through buildings, trying to find guns, trying to find armor, running into people, killing them. But then what's great is the map, so you don't just camp and turns into an 8-hour camp fest. The map shrinks every couple minutes. And if you're outside the zone, you slowly die.
Wow.
So it forces you all into the middle at the end, into this big firefight with whoever's left.
How long does that gameplay take?
It can take anywhere from, 30 seconds if you die right away.
Yeah, yeah.
To, 30 minutes, maybe.
That's amazing.
It's a super fun idea. It's adrenaline pumping when you get down there. It's fun because you're finding different weapons. You're in different parts of the map from depending on where the plane drops you off.
Okay.
It's really cool. It's like $30 on Steam, so I'd go check it out.
That's like the video game version of Catching Fire, right?
Yeah, of Hunger Games. Battle Royale, stuff like that. You just put a bunch of people on an island. They go find their weapons, and you go to town. It's fun. It's very fun.
I like it. Adam Rank, hit me.
I'm going to Daily Dap Amtrak.
Amtrak?
Yeah.
I love Amtrak.
Okay.
Wednesday, I missed the last podcast because we took the train.
Okay.
There's a train station right in the parking lot of Angel Stadium. Took it down to San Diego.
Okay.
Went down, watched the Padres in the afternoon play the Cincinnati Reds. They beat them. And they were so nice. They got done with their game early. It was a 12:40 game, and it ended at 3. So we had time to walk back for the 3:40 train, took it back up to Anaheim, went in, watched the Angels.
You did the double dip?
We did a double header.
Wow.
MLB doesn't want to give us those double headers anymore.
There have actually been a couple of them this year, which is sort of odd.
Because of the rain and things like that. So that was pretty cool. So I really appreciated that. And it's something that's underrated, especially for people who live out in California where we don't take any sort of mass transit ever.
Right. It's very rare.
It's so nice just to not have to worry about anything. And you're just like, boop, boop, and it's no big deal. We had the baby on the train, and she was fine, and everything was copacetic. So I really appreciate it. And also, there was a nice man who was working one of the sections at Petco Park.
Okay.
And he allowed – because, they have a cool, standing room only area behind home plate. I mean, it's up, so you're kind of, there's an overhang, so you miss a little bit. But it's a nice shaded area. And, of course, we can't have the baby out in the sun the whole time because there's four of us. So the wife, actually, her uncle was sitting there, was able to hold him. The guy actually was like, it was the last row, and normally they're sticklers and won't let anybody sit there. But Greg with two Gs, who works the section behind home plate at Petco Park.
Hooked it up.
Let my brother-in-law and my daughter sit in the shade.
That's great.
It was really cool. So she didn't get sunburned. Thanks. One person. That's all it takes to do something nice. So if you get an opportunity,
atta,
if you live in California, or if you live in New York where there's two stadiums close, I think you could probably pull this off. See, but it's cool because in Southern California, the Angels and Dodgers are always out of town at different times. So they're rarely, if ever, home at the same time. Which
also, who the hell wants to sit in that traffic?
Yeah, who wants
Jeez.
Also, I think I've heard of people pulling it off between Wrigley and Miller Park because they're about a 90-minute drive apart. I think there's a decent like bus that can take you up there, or there might even be a train. There is a train. I've taken the train.
I've always wanted to do that, but my fear is I'd go to Wrigley and then, you know, kind of enjoy too much of the afternoon and not be safe to drive a car.
That danger could happen at either park. you go to one, you're like, whoa, it's all of a sudden 5 o'clock.
It is called Miller Park.
Yes.
What about Derek Carr? I know it doesn't have a huge fantasy impact, but he got his long-term contract. I think it kind of does.
Is that official?
It's close.
He tweeted that it is not done, but close.
I see.
Oh, I'm sorry. It's trending.
It's trending.
So I thought it was fair game. Plus, last quarterback to lead the Raiders in passing prior to Derek Carr was?
The last quarterback to lead the Raiders? Yeah.
The Raiders, and not in the league, but like who is the Raiders' number one? Who is the Raiders' quarterback before Derek Carr?
You mean like their starter?
Their starting quarterback.
Is it Jason
Campbell?
McGloin?
Campbell?
He's currently a wide receiver in the NFL.
Terrell Pryor. That's right.
Wow.
That is correct.
He was their starting quarterback in whatever it was, 2013?
Is that right? Amazing.
And then Derek Carr took over.
Okay, so there you go. I'll give a daily dap out. I got two of them. One of them is the Ryan O'Callaghan story. If you're a football fan, I'm sure you've probably seen this already, but Ryan O'Callaghan, a former Cal player. He's an offensive lineman. He played for the Patriots and the Chiefs. It's a great story that he wrote. He basically came out as gay relatively recently here, and he wrote about his experience and his journey through coming out. But it's an emotional piece. But basically, the crux of it is he used football to kind of hide his sexuality, and he made a pact with himself that once he was done playing football at whatever level that was going to be, if it was high school, college, NFL, as soon as he was done playing football, he was going to kill himself because he did not want to come out, or he thought that coming out would be too painful for his family or whatever it might be. So, but he got some counseling, a really great backstory with Scott Pioli as well. Definitely go give that a read if you haven't already. It's a great story.
Which, sidebar, daps to the Players Tribune. Like, that was something I think some people scoffed at when it was first coming out, but they've had some really, really tremendous stuff on there, and it's cool getting that unfiltered perspective from the players.
Yeah, that's true, but this one came out on Outsports.
Oh, it was Outsports. Okay,
so
right.
Outsports.com.
I forgot. I haven't read it yet. It's bookmarked for me.
Yeah. And, you know, Players Tribune may have retweeted it or whatever.
Through Pocket.
Yeah.
Have you used it, Rank, by the way?
Yeah.
It's great, isn't it?
A couple of stories there. Okay. Yeah, let's dab Pocket.
Okay. There you go. For the second time.
I've dabbed it back in the past, but I use it literally all the time. I have it synced on my Kindle now, so when I'm at home cooking or reading or whatever, I do it there. I got Rank and their coworker Andy Fenelon on it as well. So
there you go. That's a little bit of a downer, but it has a good ending.
It's an uplifting story.
Yes, absolutely. But I will leave you with something else as well. Go to Twitter and enter in the hashtag Logomania. There's a minor league baseball logo competition happening right now.
It's a hashtag, you said?
Yes, hashtag Logomania. And what you get are just terrific ball caps.
Minor league baseball hats are the best.
Oh, my God. They're so good.
That would be a great hipster collection.
These are some great ones. And by the way, special shout out to Matt Franchise, who I think lived around Binghamton.
Yes.
He always talks about the Rumble Ponies.
I believe he went to school at
Binghamton. Yeah, the Rumble Ponies.
Yes.
So they've got some great names, and I wish some of these names would translate into actual professional sports. But Jacksonville Jumbo Shrimp, I like. The Clearwater Threshers.
The Richmond Flying Squirrels.
Yes. Give me some of that. There's the Hillsboro Hops, as in beer hops. That's pretty good.
Buddy. That's their mascot?
The Carolina Mudcats?
The Mudcats, that's a classic one.
I like it.
That's a classic.
I like it a lot. But
the Biloxi Shuckers.
Oh, dude, there's so many good ones, man. Anyways, go check it out.
The Area 51s.
The Area 51s, the Albuquerque Isotopes, as made famous by The Simpsons, which is good. But, yeah, no, look, there's some great ones out there, but I'm telling you, man, if you enjoy hats, if you enjoy logos or whatever, great sports names, hashtag Logomania. I actually have it on my Twitter account.
I wish hats fit my head because this is awesome.
I was looking for a snap. Oh, my God.
By the way, Shuck Nation and Shrimp Nation are coming after Clip Nation here, James.
Why
these hashtags. Well, just because they're hashtags. They're getting on your Clip Nation.
Yeah, that's true.
We need to put a moratorium on nations now.
Okay.
More
there's
time.
One.
There's too
like
many.
That's
the
Nation's the only.
I'll just say this: the Syracuse Chiefs, their logo. I don't know how they did not advance. Their logo is so sweet.
I need to look at this whole packet.
I'm desperately trying to find a Syracuse Chiefs snapback, and
I can't
find it.
Aren't they New Era hats?
No, they do, but they're fitted only. They have the fitted flat brim. See, I live that snapback flat brim life.
Well, because you have hair, so it's not fair.
Okay.
I didn't mean to make that rhyme, by the way.
But go check that out on Twitter. You can find I've linked to it.
Oh, my God. This is fascinating.
It's so good.
Contact the team. They'll be able to.
The Montgomery Biscuits?
Yeah, biscuits.
Dude. Yeah, dude. So, again, hashtag Logomania or find me on Twitter at James D. Coe. And I've tweeted about it.
This is okay.
Oh, my God.
I'm sorry.
Yes, please.
I don't want to. The Hillsboro Hops.
What?
When you're looking at this logo.
Yes.
You have to go to some stupid-ass gastropub and wear this. Because it just seems so appropriate. Or tap houses.
Tap houses, I guess,
is what they're called now. Because, I hang out on one all the time.
Yes.
I'm buying one. I'm going to get one of these Hillsboro Hops hats.
Thank you.
I do love the Inland Empire 66ers, but I don't think they're in this.
I might have to get one of the California ones if there's not
Dude,
like a Wisconsin
I'm
one.
I'm telling you, man. Some of these are good. I actually, there's joy in my heart right now because I have inspired these two fine gentlemen next to me to buy minor league baseball.
Wait, where is Hillsboro?
I don't know. I really
Oh, it's Illinois. No, it's Oregon.
I don't know.
Of course they would have. Now it makes sense.
It all makes
total
sense. Right. And of course, yes, okay. I was going to make a different
If you go to the
here,
team
but,
websites, though, you can probably bypass.
No, I've tried to do it all. Doesn't work.
Call them.
Can't find my snapback flat brim. Anyways, MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, close us out, man.
Real quick, yeah, I wanted to piggyback on Gelhar said about Better Call Saul, which has been fantastic. Also, just the Daily Dap to dads, because it was Father's Day the past weekend. So
excellent choice.
Two of the people in this room are fathers, so happy belated Father's Day to the two of you.
Oh, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
You know, I talked to my pa on Sunday, so happy Father's Day to him as well. So, there you go.
Patrick Claiborne, by the way, friend of the show, friend of the Stronghold, celebrating his first Father's Day, and that was not too far long ago for me, so I remember what a special day it was. Congratulations to him as well. All right, so that is your show, the NFL Fantasy Life Podcast. Like, subscribe, review it today. For Alex Gelhar, the WizKid from Wisconsin, MG, my guy, Marcus Grant, and the Fantasy Maverick, Adam Rank,
Here's
James
a snapback
Coe.
Right there.
Will you stop? That's for the Hops. It's not for the Syracuse Chiefs.
I'm going to buy a Beloit Snappers hat.
Oh, jeez.